Hello and welcome to this episode of the Event Manager Podcast by Skift Meetings, the podcast for curious event professionals embracing the future of business events. My name is Miguel Neves, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Skift Meetings. In this episode titled Collaboration and Advocacy, I have the pleasure of speaking with Amy Calvert, the CEO of the Events Industry Council. Our conversation revolves around advocating for the event industry in the wider business community. We talk about things like aggregating resources and addressing pan-industry issues as being the main areas of focus for the Events Industry Council. We talk about bringing together the members of the Events Industry Council to discuss the state of the industry and how important that was, particularly during the COVID pandemic. We talk about the importance of sharing the impact of events and the reasons for hosting events with the wider business community. We talk about advocacy and how that's really important, but we must not forget that people are at the heart of what we do. And we talk about how meaningful conversations with partners are the ones that lead to real positive change. I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation, and I invite you to check out the other episodes of the podcast, which you can find on our website or by subscribing through your favorite podcast service. Greater Phoenix, rising from the Sonoran Desert, has emerged as a premier meetings destination. We earned the Wall Street Journal designation of having a top 10 convention center, as well as the number one airport in the US. We've won citywide mega events from the Final Four to SemiCon West. We've cultivated flourishing intellectual capital in the high-tech and biomed sectors. And we've even put a brewery in our convention center. Why? Well, the desert made us do it. Plan your next meeting in Greater Phoenix. Go to visitphoenix.com/meetings. Hello and welcome to the Event Manager Podcast by Skift Meetings. Our guest today is none other than Amy Calvert, the CEO of the Events Industry Council. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Miguel. Nice to be here with you today.
Nice to be here with you. We've known each other for a few years now, and you've been the CEO of the Events Industry Council for 4 years now, 5 years, correct me?
Especially Miguel, little over three. Yeah, I actually have my three-year anniversary to the day at IMEX Frankfurt.
Okay. Well, forgive me for not counting the years correctly there. Would love to get a little bit of your story, your initial interactions with the event industry, your journey, and how you became the CEO of the Events Industry Council. And we should probably also cover what is the Events Industry Council for anybody who's not familiar with it. But first, maybe your story, and then we can cover that a little bit more.
Sure. So, I have been in the industry for, over 30 years now. Started my career primarily working on the supply side, working for hotels, hotel companies, destination management organizations. And when this opportunity came about, just over 3 years ago, I was very, very excited because I thought, this is an incredible opportunity for me to take all of those learnings and those experiences and apply them in a completely different way. And the other really, I thought, incredible aspect about EIC and something that I really love is that it's very much a community of organizations that have come together really with this common aim of serving, the sector, serving the individuals that work in the sector through their unified effort, right? And, I've always believed in that premise that we are together much stronger and that EIC in and of itself offers a forum for that really important dialogue and that type of collaboration. So, I did not get into this industry on purpose. My studies were in English literature, fine arts. And, when I started my career, I really started as an intern because I was interested in potentially opening up my own catering company, right? So I knew somebody who was a general manager at a hotel and sat down with him and had some discussions around, tell me a little bit about what this opportunity includes, and did sort of an operational focused internship. And that was it, Miguel. I really enjoy this industry for many, many reasons, but I feel very grateful, particularly over the past 3 years, because I, through the volunteer service opportunities that I've had and some of the things that I've done working with quite honestly, many of my member organizations over the years have built an incredible, you know, peer group and network of people that really inspire me and challenge me and have been tremendously supportive in this new role.
Fascinating. And thank you for sharing that. And can you describe in your words, what is the Events Industry Council, you know, how it works, and then for anybody who's really not familiar with it?
Yeah, so we are a global federation set up to serve the business events industry. So we are an organization that has 34 member associations, and they are representative of all aspects of our industry, all sectors, all global regions. We have, as I said, 34 members, but we serve through those individual organizations over 200,000 individuals. So it's a really, it's a quite interesting model. The work that we do really is on behalf of the entire sector, though. So whether, you know, we have some core pillars and areas in which we serve the industry, that is through advocacy, research, professional standards, and professional recognition. So the thought process is through, again, the sharing of resources and that common focus, we can, you know, serve the individual and help them on their journey through the events industry, whether that be, you know, professional development opportunities, building of networks, leveraging of resources and tools from an advocacy perspective. So that is the events industry in and of itself. We also administer the CMP designation, which I know you're familiar with. That is a certification that represents a community of over 12,000 individuals worldwide. And we're going through some quite interesting work to transform and to advance that credential and the competencies that support that as the foundation. So,
okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. So you have member organizations like MPI, PCMA, ICA, all these different, you know, large organizations with a lot of history. And I know that you're a federation of, you know, you represent all of them and kind of bring them all together. I'm interested to understand how you see the things that, you know, something like MPI or PCMA should cover and should address, and in terms of education, the things that they were going to do, and the things that the EIC does, or the Events Industry Council does. Where do you see that? Is there a kind of a definite line there, and where do you see that being?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I don't know if I would say that there's a definite line. I think that, you know, when I started back in November of 19, one of the things that we did, and we did pretty quickly, was we said, you know, we really need to sit down and, you know, not just develop a strategic roadmap for the next 3 to 5 years. We really need to go back and really think about what is the purpose of an organization like this, and really ensure that as an industry organization that represents, you know, multiple perspectives and, as I said, sectors, that we really can anchor to a purpose and create a vision of how this organization can really be impactful, right? And where we landed was, you know, that this organization and is really in a unique opportunity to help address some of these pan-industry issues, right, that we all are thinking a lot about right now, whether that be in the area of, you know, building capabilities and helping to support our workforce, or in the areas of regenerative thinking and sustainability, and of course, equity and inclusion. And we know this as individuals and as professionals and just members of society, that these are global challenges that not one organization or individual can solve for independent of one another. So, you know, the Federation came together and said, you know, EIC's role really is to, on behalf of the Federation, and again, on behalf of the industry and the constituency we serve, help to advance those issues. We, you know, combine resources to engage in research or to build tools and resources to help, you know, an individual go on a learning journey as it relates to those things, as opposed to each individual organization or entity doing that, again, independent of one another, right? And, you know, that is sort of the framework by which we've been operating for the past 3 years. Now, if, you know, does that mean that each of my member organizations isn't, you know, doing great work in the area of DE&I themselves, or they are not necessarily doing work in sustainability or, you know, social impact. No, I mean, each organization is, you know, serving their members and has to make some strategic decisions about, you know, how they deploy their resources and what their priorities are. I think one of the things that we said that was really important to us, though, is that we would sort of analyze the landscape and aggregate and curate resources. And we would commit to not recreating that which already exists. I think that that's a really important piece. I think the other part of it for EIC and where we have a unique opportunity is that because we are an agnostic entity, right, we can bring together different perspectives, different organizations, individuals, not necessarily members, could be non-members, to have sort of an elevated conversation around, you know, where are we as an industry? What are the key opportunities and how do we work together to solve for those? And that became very apparent during the pandemic, right, where we reached out beyond our traditional membership framework to say, you know, we really have to come together and think about what is it that we really need to do in the here and now to help people navigate, you know, the near term, and then think about what is it needed, what are we going to need to do to adapt and innovate moving forward? And that's where I think, you know, something like that Apex COVID task force was so impactful and why people were so inspired to be a part of that. And ultimately, that was, I think, one of the most really incredible gifts and acts of generosity and all really volunteer led and really important work, I think, that still resonates and will continue to resonate because some of the the core elements of those resources that we put together are around frameworks for collaboration, partnership, you know, shared risk and shared objectives, you know, analyzing that which we want to carry forward and that which we perhaps are better off leaving behind as it relates to our, you know, common practice. So
sounds like very transferable pieces of work that you've created. Is part of this that you describe in the workings of the Events Industry Council and the APEX committee, et cetera, also about communicating to people outside the industry that may not understand the industry? And, you know, is that an important part of it? And if so, kind of any initiatives or any things that you're doing to open up this kind of industry that is somewhat hidden, I feel, in many sectors, in many business sectors, you know, events happen and meetings happen, but there's not necessarily a complete understanding of how they happen.
Yeah, or why they matter, right? I think there's the opportunity. So one of the things that we have always done, but we're thinking a little bit differently about now as it relates to that question is, you know, we are working with Oxford Economics, thanks to the generous support of our partners, on the next iteration of our economic impact study. And, you know, that's really always looked traditionally at, you know, direct and indirect impact for events globally. One of the things that we said would be really important, and I think especially as we start to do, as you suggest, which is to engage with different stakeholder groups outside of our sector to, you know, sort of get ourselves out of this reactive mode that we've traditionally found ourselves in when times of crisis arise. You know, if we're trying to capture the hearts and minds of people, you know, in particular that are able to influence policy that have an impact on our workforce and our industry, then I think we need to find a way to humanize the story about the impact of events and the impact to communities. And so we're trying in this next iteration to really solve and answer some of the questions around what is the, what we're calling the catalytic impact of events, you know, so taking that indirect impact and digging a little bit deeper to understand, you know, how specifically do events help build sectors, you know, whether that be investment in infrastructure or research or, you know, even potentially education and scholarship opportunities by sector and collaboration with universities and so forth. So, you know, that is something that we will have to commit to do over time, because often the impact of our events are needing to be measured over time, right? It's very much correlates to economic development and it happens at the local level. But what we want to do is once this study is done, and we'll commit to doing it every 2 years, is really be able to then go out and talk to mainstream media and to arm, you know, our stakeholders, our members and our members' members with, you know, a toolkit of sorts so that they can be doing the same thing. And again, I think it's you know, taking the really great data that we get and the massive impact that we have, the massive ability to articulate the massive losses that were experienced and the impact of the cessation of events, and be able to engage in some conversation about, you know, how we can engage their support. And I think, you know, advocacy in my mind, you know, we traditionally have not been an organization that has engaged in true policy work, but the work that we do has been sort of foundational to that work that other organizations and entities are involved in. And I think that's the role that we'll continue to play. Yeah.
So you've provided some of the data and the research that, that can support mm-hmm. people in making those.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's making that, again, you know, casting that wide net. I think, again, sometimes as association executives, we sort of assume that we're touching everyone because we have really amazing member communities. But the reality is, and as you know this probably better than most, Miguel, there are professionals working at every level within our industry that we're trying to find new ways to connect with so that, again, we can better serve our sector and really work towards our vision.
Interesting. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more about that work. It sounds like we need to improve, or you're looking to improve how we do that, right? How we connect with the external, the wider business community. Is there any kind of major changes that you see in the approach, or, you know, has the COVID pandemic created a situation where we have to communicate in a different way? Because it does feel like we've tried this before. You know, there was a recession, the big recession in 2008 and 2009, and there was a lot of struggle in finding a way to make the case for events and meetings. And, you know, to some extent we did, but I think we could always improve. Do you think that we did kind of better now in the COVID pandemic, or is there still a lot of improvement that, that needs to be done there?
Well, I always think there's room to improve. That's way, you know, that's always my mindset. You know, I think that, you know, advocacy requires a couple of different key components, right? And I think, you know, obviously in some instances, it's going to be a very surgical approach where you know that there's a certain group that you really need to, you know, influence and in order to, you know, pass legislation or to gain support. But then there's that, again, that sort of broader kind of wider net approach where you're really kind of speaking on behalf of the industry. And I think, you know, really trying to inspire perhaps a different viewpoint about why what we do matters. And that's a little bit different than some of the policy and legislative work. And yeah, I think that sometimes we get into the habit of thinking, you know, oh yeah, that organization over there is doing that. We don't really need to get involved. And, you know, and then we find ourselves in a crisis and then we ask ourselves, well, what was the impact? And I think part of it is, well, we really from the onset have to sort of understand, well, what are our success metrics? And, you know, how are we going to hold ourselves accountable to be evaluating our based, you know, on the investment that we're being, that is being made against these endeavors to the outcomes. And I think we all have a bit of a role to play. I think that's one of the things that we talk about a lot at EIC is that, you know, advocacy, while we all might not be doing policy work, advocacy is something that, it, you know, as individuals and as leaders, regardless of what part of the industry we're working in or how long we've been working in it, we have a bit of an obligation, I believe, to be able to articulate, you know, the story about why, you know, what we do matters and how we build lives, improve economies, build communities, and all of those things that we say we do. And I think, you know, during the pandemic, you know, we saw a lot of engagement from adjacencies, you know, organizations that necessarily that, you know, host events, but haven't really necessarily been actively engaged in the events industry, sort of coming into the conversation and articulating it within their sectors, you know, the impact of not being able to hold a large scale trade show in the retail sector and the, you know, health sciences sector and so on and so forth. And I think that was pretty inspirational and pretty impactful as it related to getting some of the relief packages that came through, executed on. So we'll see. But I think, you know, this is an ongoing journey. I think it, you know, requires us again to think a bit, little bit differently about, you know, the people that we're engaging with and the conversations that we're having, and really that, you know, we focus on the human element of what we do, right? You know, at the heart of what we do is if we're fostering human connections, and, you know, whether we're talking about advocacy or whether we're talking about workforce, you know, that the common denominator there is people, right? And people are at the heart of the matter, regardless of what sector that you work in. And, you know, I think the pandemic has taught us a lot of things. Hopefully we can carry those forward as we, you know, adapt to the world that we're living in currently and really keep that at the forefront of what we're doing, whether we're talking about outcomes or whether we're talking about event design or advocacy. You know, one of the things that we're focused a lot now on is, as it relates to our future and how we best serve our sector, is what is it going to take to inspire people who might not necessarily be thinking about our industry as a place to build a career, to, you know,
the attracting of new talent and fresh talent.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the attracting of new and fresh talent is, you know, kind of really connecting that those dots and really talking about our values and our impact. And then what are the skills, right? What are the skills? What are the capabilities needed? And not necessarily those traditional logistical elements, but the broader skills that are needed and talent that is needed to drive our industry forward.
Yep. A very big topic there. I'm sure I'm interested in kind of exploring that more and understanding that future, the future human resources within the industry and human talent, etc.
Are you ready to celebrate your successes in the world of meetings and events? The Skift Meetings Awards are back for 2024, recognizing the most innovative business events companies across 15 categories, and we want you to be a part of it. Winners will feature on Skift Meetings, sending a clear signal to events professionals around the world that these are partners they can rely on. The final deadline for submissions is June 11th. We encourage you to start your submission today to secure the best entry rates. For more information and to start your submission, head to live.skift.com.
Wanted to kind of go back a little bit to the work that you're doing at the Events Industry Council in terms of, you mentioned advocacy. You mentioned it's everybody's responsibility to advocate for the industry and for what they do and all these things. Could you talk a little bit about the resources that you have available or that you're working on that in your mind should be part of the toolkit that we have to advocate for the industry?
Well, in addition to the, you know, the economic data, right, we're doing the study right now. We've released some quarterly barometers that really are looking at demand and looking at occupancies. And that's been in partnership with Amadeus and Cvent. And so I think that those are obviously great resources to have at the ready and are publicly available. But we're also, you know, working on resources as it relates to, again, going back to some of those pan-industry issues that we're focused on in the area of, you know, regenerative thinking and sustainability and social impact. You know, we have a center of excellence that focuses on sustainability and social impact. And under that umbrella, we've developed a new certificate for individuals looking to understand, you know, what is that sustainability journey and how does that help as an event organizer or as a supplier? How does that help me better understand the things that I need to implement in order to move the needle and have an impact. So the Sustainable Event Certificate Program, we're relaunching our Sustainable Event Standards, which I think you know a little bit about from your background with EIC, but the Sustainable Event Standards are actually relaunching tomorrow. I know we talked a little bit about that leading up to this conversation, but those are really an incredible resource for organizations, events, venues that are looking to secure a framework for collaboration with their supply chain, their partners, and really set common objectives around moving the needle in the areas of sustainability and DE&I. And we're really excited about that. That was a global collaboration. There's different points of access depending on where, you know, you are in the journey and the work that's been done leading up to the point that you actually begin the sustainable event standards journey, which is ultimately, I think, you know, a tremendous resource to the industry, because right now I think what happens is people become overwhelmed at the enormity of the task, right? They're not sure where to begin. Not all of them live and breathe it every day. Not all of them have the buy-in at the organizational level that they might need to embark on that journey. So the standards themselves, the tools and resources are, again, are just ultimately a framework for collaboration. And then to celebrate successes along the way, right? And to set your sights on achievements over space and time. So I think those are really important resources that EIC is offering the industry. And then the other piece of it is really looking at this equity acceleration plan that we've developed. So we came together about 2 years ago, right after the murder of George Floyd. And there was this conversation around, you know, we've been talking for a very long time about systemic racism, about, you know, these issues around equity and accessibility within our industry. And I'm not sure that we've ever really asked ourselves, again, going back to, you know, are we asking ourselves the tough questions around, are we having an impact? Are we really moving the needle? It starts by, you know, coming together and saying, you know, what are the areas in which we think we can have impact? So this, we appointed a task force to look at the issue on behalf of all of our members and our, or, you know, our industry. And I think there are about 30 people working in this task force, and it's really an incredible group, very inspiring. And one of the things that we said is that, you know, we have to understand where we are right now. So we did a bit of a benchmarking study. We're about to release that along with the report on the findings. But from there, we'll be building out tools and resources and, again, aggregating and curating some of the things that already exist out there, so that an individual or an organization that's interested in looking at, you know, how do I help, you know, from an equity standpoint, address that within the framework of career development, leadership development, organizational frameworks, and event frameworks. And, you know, there's always, you know, that piece of it that I think is so important. And again, it's, you know, measuring our success over time. So this group aims to be together for about 3 years and look at different aspects of equity acceleration. But I think the piece that we're really, really excited about is that, you know, we have this framework now to measure our progress over time. And I think that's the important element. And then to be transparent about it. You know, have we really moved the needle? Are these things having an impact? So, you know, EIC is this really just, it's a really interesting organization that I think has done a lot of great work. I think one of the things that's really important, though, is that we continue to try to find new ways to touch more people, right, outside of our traditional membership network. And so we're going to be launching in about, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, a new corporate membership status. So traditionally, we've been just associations. But if we really are trying to achieve our vision, Miguel, I think we, you know, we really want to try to position this organization as the entity that can host more of a global events forum. And in order to do that, I think, you know, we want to really focus in on who are the people, who are the organizations that need to be part of that conversation. So a lot going on, but all, I think, to that important goal, and that is, you know, really sort of being the organization that can help an individual practitioner find a learning journey and find a really valuable and meaningful experience within the events sector.
Very interesting. Thank you for sharing all those. That's a lot of things going on, as always. You mentioned one thing which I thought was really interesting, that one of the committees, if I'm not mistaken, has a sort of expiry date, or at least is together for a certain period and will be monitoring something for a certain period. I think that's a really interesting approach. Is that something that you're doing for that one specifically, or is this something that you're looking in general? Because I think it is important that we're honest. If we've achieved something, then we probably don't need committee X or Y. But if we haven't, then also setting a date for when we want to achieve something is going to spur us on rather than kind of have standing committees, et cetera.
Yeah. So we, that particular group is the Equity Task Force, right? And we, you know, I think as is often the case, when you set out to achieve a specific goal, we're never quite sure how long it will take. You know, we have to adapt and adjust as new learnings come to light. And we set an original target of 3 years for this particular group because we thought it would allow us to go through that framework of, you know, establishing the goals and objectives for this particular task force, deploy the initial research, to, you know, do the creation of the resources, and then have the ability to then go back and see, you know, are they being impactful? But we went through a similar exercise with the APEX COVID Recovery Task Force, right? So we knew that that group was not going to stay together for, the intention behind that group wasn't to, you know, for it to stay together as a standing committee. It was truly a task force meant to sort of look at in the here and now, you know, what can we do to best serve our sector? And we've evolved that into a bit of a different group where, you know, they're coming together in more of a critical response framework. So they'll meet on a quarterly basis as opposed to monthly, and they'll be evaluating some of these bigger issues and opportunities like workforce. You know, one of the things that we have a program that we're working on right now that is going to take advantage of the framework of our member and partner events to activate at the local level some engagement with potential talent coming into our industry. And so that group is going to be, you know, kind of looking at that through a global lens and also evaluating what else. What are the things that are coming to light as we, you know, continue to move through this period that we're living in and, you know, have some rich conversation around, you know, some of the key issues and opportunities. But again, that group will likely not be together forever. It might continue to evolve. And some of those resources that were created are now being managed by the APEX Commission, which is a standing committee, as you know. So I think it's important to be honest with ourselves that not everything needs to live on in perpetuity. That sometimes it's okay to sunset something and move on.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of that approach. And I think it's important to have those milestones that we set. Any future plans for the Events Industry Council that you'd like to ambitiously discuss?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that's important that we're working on right now, and it has a strong connection to the future of our organization, but also the industry, is the future of the CMP, right? And we're looking at, we're going through what is called a competency profile project right now, and that will evolve into what is typically in the world of credentialing referred to as a job task analysis. It's a very interesting time to be embarking on a project like this, given everything that we've learned over the past 2.5-3 years and the reality of some of the things that we can no longer turn away from, right? And, you know, one of the things that we're trying to think about, Miguel, is, you know, that there is a certain amount of what we do that is common, right? There's a certain amount of our practice that's common, you know, whether that's 75-80% of it. And then there are things that will vary depending on the region that we're working in or the sector that we're working in. And so what is the right framework for the competencies, to develop the competencies that are necessary for an individual to build a strong foundation within our industry? And, you know, how does that then get integrated into the job task analysis and the international standards for the CMP? And it's really kind of looking at, you know, not just what is relevant now, but what will be relevant into the future. I think that's a really important part of it. And so we're holding these really intense focus groups regionally right now and having some pretty honest conversation about things that might need to vary by region and the adaptations that we need to make inside of the world of the CMP and the credential. But we're also looking at, you know, EIC as the ecosystem that an individual can come into to build that learning journey that is tied not necessarily to the international standards of the CMP, but more the competencies themselves, right? So setting up the technology stack and the organization in a way that helps create relevance for an individual, regardless of whether you're a member of a member of mine. What really matters is that EIC can serve as a hub for learning and professional development and connection. So that's a pretty interesting project. And that is going to be something that we're going to be talking a little bit more about by the end of the year. And it involves a couple of key components, but the kind of looking at the competencies and the international standards and then, you know, creating relevance inside of the credential for the community is another area that we're looking at.
Fascinating. Sounds like another excellent project. I think all of your projects are quite big in scope, right? Quite ambitious and move a lot of things. So it's never a small task.
No, it isn't. But, you know, I think we're definitely trying to focus in on that, which we already have underway, right? And really prioritizing the projects that we have ongoing right now, because they're very important and they're sort of long overdue, maybe in some ways. The reality of a lot of things that we're dealing with, but it's all good. And, you know, we are tremendously grateful for the support that we get from our incredible members and our volunteers.
Great. We talked about some of the challenges facing the industry right now. Are there any particular ones that are coming up ahead that we're maybe not talking about enough right now?
Well, you know, probably what comes to mind are two things, right? I think we touched on a little bit about, you know, workforce and kind of the need to reframe the conversation that we have about who we are and what we do and why what we do matters, right, as a sector and the connection between those two things. I think that we throw words around a lot, like advocacy and workforce, but we really don't get to the heart of the matter, right? Like, what is it we're really talking about? Why does it matter? And how do we really, you know, how do we really shift the narrative? And what are the things that really are going to make a difference? And, you know, I kind of hang on to, there's two articles that I read last year that really kind of I pick up quite often and I go back to, and it's part of a series that Harvard Business Review did about a guide to building resilient businesses. And I think they have a direct application to events themselves. And, you know, one is fostering a culture of belonging in the workplace. And I think there's, you know, I think there's something to what they talk about in that article that applies, whether it's, you know, you're talking about a hybrid workplace and the evolution of how we cultivate and build talent and inspire connections through events that we need to be spending a little bit more time talking about, right? You know, because there's a lot of discussion around things like, you know, purpose, objective, and audience, but I think we really have to spend some more time kind of unpacking that as it relates to the opportunity now that I think events have to serve a need that has come about and is even greater perhaps by this new world that we're living in and this hybrid work environment, right?
Yeah, and that's something we've been also trying to cover quite a bit, both on Skift Meetings and Skift, this idea of this, you know, hybrid workforce and how does that change in the role of events in creating company culture when it is a hybrid workforce, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, events, in my opinion, are a way for us to, you know, sort of articulate culture and values and community, right? And I think that that's something that's really interesting to me and to us. And as we start to think about skills and the conversations that we're having as it relates to, you know, building career pathways and learning journeys, it's something we're trying to keep at the forefront. You know, the things that we're doing. And then I think, you know, kind of going back to another article about, you know, high performing teams and kind of that cycle, those psychological elements of, you know, autonomy, competence, and relatedness, you know, and what can we do to help position events as ways to help organizations, industries, and sectors achieve those objectives as it relates to supporting their talent and their people. You know, it's a lot easier to do that than try to recruit new or build new, right? So we're in a fortunate position where we have, in many cases, sort of a built-in audience that we've been serving for quite some time. So I think it's going through this process of that type of a lens, sort of evaluating the role that events have to play in this new reality, right?
It sounds all very linked to this idea of the future human talent in the workforce, and that role of events and attracting to events, I think is very, very important.
Yeah. And then kind of the underpinning of this whole idea of DE&I and accessibility and this foundation of equity in the world that we live in, where I think people are hungering and yearning for those connections, and yet in some instances not sure where to go to find those, right? And I think that's one of the things that I think a lot about based on, I guess, my own lived experience, is that, you know, we have to talk a little bit more intentionally around what are the benefits of being part of a community. It doesn't necessarily have to be a traditional community, like a membership organization, but just finding your place, right? And the benefit that can be derived by developing that peer network and, you know, creating those places where you can go to learn and develop and grow. Think of I have a daughter who's 28 and she's working in product marketing for a technology company. And she started in her role during the pandemic, right? And met her teammates, after 18 months of working for the first time at a conference out in San Francisco about a month ago. And, you know, just listening to her talk a little bit about, you know, what that meant to her and how that helped kind of break down barriers and try to better understand some of the dynamics that were happening within her team and within the company, you know, I thought to myself, well, you know, it's one of those light bulb moments that helps us sort of connect the dots about why, you know, what we do is so important.
Absolutely. Connecting the dots and putting a name to these things is so important. So, I mean, You mentioned a lot of things that we're working on to develop culture and how events are a big part of this. It does sound like we still have room for improvement in how we do events and how we enable events to have those sort of impacts. Do you have a vision of what events in the future could look like if they're able to do these things, if they're able to have these sort of impacts? And, you know, are you clear on what the differences are of those types of, you know, future events, ideal events, compared to what we have today?
You know, to a very large degree, I think that question about relevance and, you know, value is somewhat subjective to the individual, right? You know, I think, and that will always be the case. I think that, as it relates to a vision for the future of events, I think it strongly correlates back to the vision that we have for EIC. And that is, you know, sort of reframing our industry more closely aligned with, you know, the true purpose and the true impact, which is fostering human connections, right? And if we're really successful at doing that, then we're creating environments where people feel like there is psychological safety and there's equity and there's inclusion. And it isn't because we're saying it is so, it is because they're telling us that it is, right? And I think that's a really important North Star for us to be keeping. But I think that it's important that we, you know, we celebrate our successes along the way, right? And that we don't engage in sort of these narrow kind of very black and white conversations about, you know, one type of an event over another, you know, because there's a place for a variety of types of events to add to an individual's personal and professional experience. And I think it's just a matter of evolving to a place where we're really working in partnership with the demand and the supply side to execute at the highest level. I think that's one of the things, like personally for me, based on my experience, that I would love us to be thinking about and talking more about, is that, you know, it isn't about necessarily you know, casting the widest net as it relates to, you know, sourcing and working with partners. I think we have to really be more selective and engage in meaningful conversations with our partners about shared risk and shared objectives to ultimately create great experiences, right? And that is, starts by, you know, keeping our customer and our customer's customer at the forefront of our thinking as we start to build out these experiences and execute. And I'm not sure that we do that on a consistent basis enough, right? Because we're so busy being busy and again, focusing on casting that wide net. So I, you know, I always go back to quality over quantity and really honoring what we say we do in our industry, which is, you know, built on partnerships, really honoring those partnerships and asking generous questions and being present in those conversations to build better outcomes.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that that brings things together, quality over quantity and I guess in many ways focus, right? Because I think if we cast the widest net, it is an unfocused one. And I don't think people benefit from that necessarily.
No, yes. But that's the way we've done things, right? So we have to, you know, we have to check ourselves.
And what do you think is going to make us do that? I mean, it's obviously, I agree with the approach. I think it is a shift, but are we ready to do that? Are we, you know, are we confident that that'll work and to jump, take that leap of faith?
Well, that's a good question. I think that that goes back though to, you know, some of the work that we've been trying to do within our various committees, and that is really, really sort of, you know, we talked about this whole, you know, idea of trust and confidence and empathy, right? As it relates to, you know, what was needed in the near term to help us navigate, you know, the impact of the pandemic. And I believe in my heart that those things will always be at the forefront of what we need to be doing and thinking about when we're engaging in the business of events, right? And so if we're truly honoring and anchored to, again, the value of the event experience and the foundation is trust and empathy, we have to take the time by definition to engage in more thoughtful and meaningful conversations with our partners and our teammates, because otherwise, you know, we're just going to be asking ourselves questions at the end of, you know, why aren't we getting the results that we've achieved? So I don't know, we're going to continue to focus on it through our committee and the work that we're doing and in hopes that building those skills into the competencies and the framework for professional development will have an impact on, you know, our individual's ability to see that as a priority and find the time to focus and engage in those types of conversations. We'll see.
I like that. Coming back to basics and kind of reaffirming that desire to connect, I think is really important going forward. Amy, thank you so much for sharing all this with us. I think this, we've touched on some really interesting topics and we've connected the dots with a lot of what the EIC does, which I think is important. And I don't mean to sound that everybody should know what the EIC does, but I'm trying my best to help get the message out as much as possible. So,
I'm grateful, Miguel, for that.
So I wanted to conclude asking you for a recommendation for a guest to be on the podcast. And I think you've thought of someone, so I'm curious to find out who that is.
So I would nominate Jason Dunn, who's the SVP at Visit Cincinnati and the chair of our equity task force. I think you would really enjoy talking with him and listening to his perspective on some of the work that we're doing at EIC. He's one of our newest board members. I have to give Jason a lot of credit because when he came in as the chair of National Coalition of Black Meeting Planners, he really went out of his way to get engaged in the various organizations and that comprise our membership and has been tremendously supportive, not only of me professionally, but of EIC and the role that we play. But he's very passionate about, you know, obviously the importance of equity and really addressing the notion of systemic racism. But listening to his story and his lived experience, I think you'd find really inspiring and his vision of the future. So I nominate Jason Miguel.
That sounds great. I will definitely ask Jason to be on the show, and I look forward to learning more about his story and all the work that he's doing. So yeah, that should be a really interesting episode. Thank you. So I'm just going to say thank you and goodbye, and really appreciate you being with us today. And hopefully everybody listening enjoyed that as much as I did.
Thanks, Miguel. It was really great to spend time with you as always, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you very much.